Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Space, the final frontier.
These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds. To boldly go where no one has gone before.
Engage.
Enterprise, Enterprise.
This is Captain Jean-Luc Picard.
Captain Janeway.
Captain Sisko.
This is Captain Jonathan Archer.
Special Miss Burnham.
Red alert.
Photon torpedoes, fire.
The official Star Trek podcast.
Engage.
Make it so.
With your host, Jordan Hoffman.
That, sir, is illogical.
And to make sure history never forgets.
This is Engage.
Hailing frequencies open, sir.
Yes. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Engage, the official Star Trek podcast. I am your host, Jordan Hoffman. It is a pleasure, as always, to be in your ears and in your hearts. And last week's episode was a lot of fun. Our friend Erin, who Skyped in from good old, where the hell she is, Old Blighty,
yes.
The British Isles. But this week, we have a great new guest, my new best friend. I just met him 5.5 minutes ago. But he's got a notepad out and a pen that clearly you got for free.
Well, clearly.
Is that a free? Where? How did you get that pen?
At a bar, I would imagine.
You got it. It says Bullet Bourbon on it. So, but it's early. We're not drinking Bullet Bourbon. I'm drinking coffee. My guest today is a fellow by the name of John Madden. And John Madden, you are not the sports telecaster. Is he alive still?
He's yes. alive. He's okay. alive. Yes.
At there's also a John Madden who's a filmmaker.
Yes. He Shakespeare in Love.
That was him. Yeah.
Yes.
There's a hockey player too.
With a lot
that's
of John
right.
Madden.
There is. Yeah.
Are they all spelled the same way?
I think so.
Yes. Yeah.
Shakespeare in Love was John Madden. He did also the Cider House Rules, right?
I don't know.
Maybe
about,
not. But
maybe
same,
not.
Same,
but
same sphere
genre,
of type
yes.
of movie. Yeah, you
yes.
know, kind of.
But I'm the real John Madden.
Yeah,
I don't
F
know
those
what,
other
whatever,
guys.
Yeah,
that you know, sports guy.
No relation. I have no tickets. No free video games.
You get that a lot.
I have
with
just
your name,
myself.
Right?
Oh yeah, the airports. TSA agents always ask when they look at my license. They like, say, "Oh,
who you like in the in the Atlantic conference?"
They want my predictions. They want tickets. They want free video games. And
do they think it's you?
Oh, they or they think I'm, you know,
his son,
nephew
yeah.
that I have some
because
kind of pull.
The John Madden of sports broadcasting. He's got to be 85 years old,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And you're a mere 83.
I will take that. I will take that any day. Any day and two times on Sunday. That's fine.
John Madden is here not to talk about sports or Miramax films. He's here to talk about the work he does in AI, which stands for artificial intelligence.
There we go.
Artificial intelligence is a big deal mm-hmm. for Star Trek fans. If you came on to Star Trek as I did, kind of, I've discussed it on this podcast a million times, the 1-2 punch of discovering, of watching Star Trek IV in theaters, which did not have too much AI in it, although the teaching scene actually is probably truer to real AI than anything else.
Well, you could get into a discussion about V'ger, whether that was AI
right,
or
right.
Some
well,
kind
that's
of
going
form of AI.
Sure, sure. But I mean, in Star Trek 4 at the beginning, when Spock is
retraining his mind. Yes.
Was it correct? Correct.
How do you feel? How do you feel?
Right. Yeah. 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 So that's awesome. That is exactly. That's probably very close to the type of work you do. Actually, is that type of AI as opposed to Data? Right. The character.
Yeah. I mean, you know, on Star Trek, there's quite a spectrum of AI technology.
Yeah.
Data and probably the Doctor from Voyager being at the sort of the far end.
Sure.
In terms of kind of real learning,
right.
self-aware.
Well, that's
conscious.
That's
AI.
The thing about the Doctor is like he's fine as the EMH, but then when they're trapped and Harry Kim is like, I'm going to give it a subroutine so it can teach itself.
Right.
And then now he's like
strolling around the ship, solving, falling in love, right, you know, right. solving every problem.
Well, yeah, he had a nervous breakdown. Remember
he
that one episode
yes,
where, you know, and they had to shut him off and wipe his memory because he couldn't remember.
And he wrote opera also,
yes,
right?
Wrote opera. He sang. So
we hope the project you're working on. So, so John, you work for a company called IPsoft,
yes,
right? And
yes.
This is not a commercial for IPsoft, but
right.
IPsoft has been around for
20 years.
20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And you've been working in this field for close to that. I mean,
right.
17 years, you
That's
said?
Right, right.
And IPsoft does a number of things, but their sort of flagship property, if I can call her that, is Amelia.
That's right.
And Amelia, I don't know too much. I don't know much more than what Amelia is data, right? Amelia is in the future.
A forerunner of data, certainly.
You have created, you personally, you and your massive multinational corporation.
The brilliant people I work with.
The
we
brilliant
work
people
with the best and the best and the brightest.
Has created a product called Amelia.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not known by the man. Like, I never heard of Amelia before I met you via
mm-hmm.
the person who introduced us,
mm-hmm.
which is... But I've heard of other things like it. But what I've since learned is that Amelia actually is in a lot of key places already.
Right.
And is miles ahead of other famous AIs that are just better known because of, well, you'll tell me why they're better known. But like, you know, was it Watson, right? That's a famous
Watson
one.
Watson from IBM.
Right.
And, you know, there's Siri and Alexa.
Siri, Alexa,
and
right.
They all get lumped together. Very commonly.
But Amelia's been around just as long, or if not longer?
Yes. She has history. And
Amelia is actually better than some of these other
Well, I would certainly say so. I like to think we have the most advanced, what we call most human AI platform on the market.
Okay. So you tell me a little bit about about Amelia and how you work with her, and then I'll tell you why you're about to ruin the world and the robots are going to take over.
We're not building Skynet, everybody. We're not building Skynet. That's the first, you know, I tell people what I do for a living. They're like, oh, great, you're building Skynet. And,
right.
But no, we're not anywhere near Skynet. Amelia is, she's a, what we like to call a cognitive AI platform. She's not a chatbot. You know, you've had experience with chatbots where, you know, you're on a website. Oh, do you want to chat? And generally speaking, what you're not actually talking to a human. You're just talking to a piece of programming that's very bidirectional. You know, one question in, one answer out. It can only answer certain things.
Right. You're having trouble buying tickets for something. It's
right.
not working.
Right.
Would you like to chat? I can't. You know, my credit card isn't going through. Did you check? Did you use the right expiration date or something
well,
like that?
Or maybe not even that. They'll just ask you to enter it again. Because,
oh,
see,
yeah.
What Amelia does, she has a couple things over the other the other folks in the market. One is that she's got, you know, they designed her really to emulate the human brain in all of its aspects. So she can learn on her own. She can talk like a human and understand what you're saying. What I mean by that is she can understand utterances and phrases, and she has conversational intelligence. She has contextual awareness, so she can switch conversations very easily. For example, if you were to, and she's in use at banks and insurance companies all over the world, if you were to engage with Amelia and say something like, I was at my brother's wedding last night. She might actually prompt and say, oh, so you have a problem with your credit card, or you lost your credit card. She might actually have the awareness.
She might know that if you're out
right.
doing certain things, what are the problems that can
exactly.
that can emanate from that?
Exactly. So it's really
wow.
what elevates her is her ability to learn on her own, to have that awareness of context, the ability to converse in a way that's not, you know, you don't have to enter a certain phrase or... a certain word for her to recognize what you're trying to do or what you're trying to accomplish.
Wow. So, it can, I don't want to say read your thoughts, but it can anticipate your needs based on cultural cues in general.
Right. She's got advanced analytics capabilities. She has emotional capabilities. You know, she reads sentiments.
What do you mean emotional?
What I mean is that if you're engaging with her, if you've lost your credit card, that's obviously an upsetting experience. And,
sure.
And you're interacting with her, she'll say things like, don't worry, I'll make sure that your, you know, any fraudulent charges, are flagged, and
yeah.
In other words, she'll recognize that this is an upsetting experience for you, and so she'll try to reassure you that it's going to be okay.
And does or that work? Do people calm down when they hear a robot say,
"She's not a robot"?
when they hear an artificial intelligence, when they hear
data being received,
that voice—that's not what she sounds like.
No,
right?
She does not sound like that.
Okay, but so.
But it's better than just getting some kind of...
When you do hear something like that.
When you hear something like
working.
That back. That, yeah.
Working. But
when you hear that, as opposed to, okay, all right.
Acknowledged. I mean, that's not going to do it for you. That's not going to make yeah. you feel like she understands what you're...
I think you might be feeling. Right. I think you might be right. You're a zillion-dollar corporation. I think you guys know what you're doing. But my experience with, what's sort of the probably the phrase you guys hate when you call... What is it called when you call a bank or whatever and it's not a person, you say...
Automated teller? Or?
Yeah, automated. Or no, there's even like a more regressive term like...
Like an interactive voice system.
Yeah, if you said like, I can't even get a person. I'm talking to, phone service or whatever it is. I'm trying to think of what my dad would call it. You know, it's not even a person. It's a robocall or whatever. When they are a little bit like... Okay, we got it. Or like, all right, great job. You know, mm-hmm. That even though you know that it's not a person telling
right.
you great job,
right?
It still clicks something in your brain, right?
Right, right. It does. But you know, that also only gets you so far, right? I mean, if you're on the phone talking right. to a robot agent, and this robot's not able to help you
right.
get the job done, they have to transfer you to a human, an actual
yeah.
live person to talk to. Now, Amelia can do that. But unlike other systems, she records and remembers everything that already happened. You know, if you had to enter personal information or credit card information, so that by the time the human gets it, have you ever had an experience where you go through that robot and you get
yeah.
the human agent, you have to start all over again and say,
yes, yes, yes.
Oh, my name is this, etc. With
yeah.
Amelia, she's smart enough to pass all that on to
so by the
human agent and work together.
Yeah,
say she collaborates with them.
That's awesome. By the time you get to the person, they're like, oh, yeah, I got your date of birth.
Yep.
It's a lot of times the medical stuff. Your
yeah.
prescription is,
right.
It's out, but the insurance didn't say it was okay. All
yeah.
right, let me, oh, yeah, we got that.
But here's the great thing. Amelia's
yeah.
still in the background listening in because she
no.
wants to, she wants to, listening in. All right, everybody calm down. No, she monitors the conversation so that if the same issue comes up with another caller,
she can learn from
it. She can learn from it and not have to elevate it to a human agent.
So Amelia is the third parties that use her, or the vendors, or whatever you guys call it internally.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say they're banks, insurance agents.
Mm-hmm.
You use it for video game stuff too, I read.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all independent and all over the world. So different
right.
languages and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Is it all eventually cycling into one central brain? Or is it like siphoned off? Like, let's say there's a video game client in Sweden, because I know you have a lot of Norwegian stuff going on. I've seen Amelia, by the way. She looks very Nordic. She's
yep.
very beautiful. So let's say there's a video game company in Sweden, and they're handling all their internal stuff and questions from clients and whatnot. Is their stuff and the insurance company that you use in California, are they connected in any way?
They're not connected physically, networked. There's no central
brain
or hub back
okay.
at our headquarters that is collecting all this information for nefarious purposes.
I don't mean nefarious. I mean for the good. I mean
no. But what happens is you can learn from every engagement. I mean just like we talked about Skynet, and I have this conversation all the time. Artificial intelligence, just like every technology, it's not inherently good or bad. It's
right.
what people do with it.
Don't think about Scott. Think about like Foundation or something.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Think
right.
about the good of knowledge.
Right, exactly. But what we definitely learn from different client engagements and pick up best practices because, you know, Amelia, just like any other technology, needs to be programmed to a certain extent, and you have to upload certain information into her to get her started in working for a client. So if we learn that people who deal with insurance on certain functions, whether it's, I don't know, mortgage applications, whether they're using certain phrases, or we can train her So that she gets better when she goes to another insurance company and starts working for them. So,
it's all very iterative.
It's very best practice based.
Right. Well, so I mentioned Foundation a minute ago. Let's talk about the other Asimov, the iRobot, and they have the three laws, right? Mm-hmm. You can't harm a human. And what. Mm-hmm. Are there laws of AI that you shouldn't? I mean, the obvious one would be, you know, let's say you're incorporating AI into an medical insurance, right? Mm-hmm. So you, if that person knows you're right. taking medicine A,
sure.
but that's private information that maybe you don't want out there in the world.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I would imagine that one sacrosanct law would be thou shalt not tell other.
Right.
Right, so that would be the biggie.
I mean, Amelia has to operate just like any other employee in a company.
But are there like written codes? And the question is, since there are more, I mean, Amelia clearly is the best, but are all the AIs agreeing on these laws yet, or is it still too new?
Well, there's laws, kind of, you know, philosophically, how far should AI go? But there's real laws and real regulations that every company has to adhere to. So, for example, in your medical example, there are HIPAA laws and other things that prevent exchange of certain medical records and medical information.
Right.
Amelia is trained on those, and so she knows what she can offer or what she can share and what she can't. Or, you know, in insurance, there are licensed agents and non-licensed agents, right? So if you're dealing, a non-licensed agent can actually work with Amelia, and Amelia can tell that agent what they're allowed to do and what they can do, depending on regulations. So,
but it's Amelia's job to learn and do better and try to be helpful.
Right.
But it's also, that's her prime directive.
Mm-hmm.
So when Amelia comes across something that any logical person would know, here's where I should bend the rules and just let this happen. I mean, that's part of life. People go like, all right, I'm not supposed to do this, but it'll just make life easier if I do.
Mm-hmm.
Does Amelia know to do that?
She more than likely would, if she gets a question or an issue that she just doesn't know the proper or the exact way to go, that's when she'll call in her human colleagues because Amelia is amazing technology and it's amazing platform. But it's technology and a platform. You know, our CEO, Chaitin Dubey, says all the time, you know, the thing that humans have over AI is our ability to be creative and inspire people, and that kind of human awareness that, as you said, allows to, you know, you're saying like, you know, if you fudge it here or bend the rules here, that's not something that Amelia
has the ability to do.
Well,
she can't assess.
She can certainly assess and get it as far as she's learned to do and as far as she's been trained to do.
Yeah.
But at that point, you know, we say that, you know, there's all the talk about AI taking over people's jobs and you know, we're going to wipe out whole industries. And I don't see it that way. We don't see it that way. It's always about AI collaborating with, you know, I always say AI is not here to work, you know, without or against us. It's here to work, you know, with and for us.
Yeah.
And collaborate with us. So it's not an either or kind of proposition.
All right, I buy it. I mean, you know, we'll know when we get there, but I think
we're already there.
Oh my God,
in some cases.
We're already there.
I mean, let's be clear.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Engage.
Engage.
The official Star Trek podcast.
Energize.
So how, having worked in this field for 17 years and being a big Star Trek fan, are there parts of Amelia or AI in general that you think were in just like blatantly inspired by Star Trek or sci-fi in general?
Well, I mean, you know, Star Trek's had a big impact on the tech field overall. Everything from, you know, communicators looking like phones to you know, I don't think it's, is it an accident that, you know, Amelia, Siri, Alexa, they're all assistants with female voices like the Enterprise compute. Thank you very much.
Data being received.
So, you know, I think that Star Trek has absolutely had an influence on certainly how we view AI, and I think it's starting to work its way into the practical applications and how AI is actually being built. I mean, you know, the whole theme of, you know, technology versus people, and, you know, when does the technology overtake humanity, and that's pretty classic Star Trek themes, and yeah. Those themes are kind of continuing now as we get into this greater discussion around AI. I mean, think of, you know, all the way back to, you know, the M5, right, the ultimate computer, mm-hmm. right. And if you look at that episode, it was ahead of its time in a lot of ways, not just because it's Star Trek,
right?
But because of some of the themes and the issues that, you know, when did that come out? 1968?
I think that was season two. So
yeah,
that would
right.
be 68.
Yeah. Yeah. And so decades later, we're still having these discussions. I mean, you know, the M5 comes aboard. What's the first thing they do? Well, they get rid of pretty much all the crew and keep right. a skeleton. Oh, AI's taking over jobs.
Yeah.
You know, Spock's kind of enamored with it at first, right? And Kirk's all, you know, very disdainful. Like,
yeah, he's skeptical. Yeah. Spock is fascinated. Right. Scotty's like, oh, boy,
yeah, Scotty's you know. Like, well, Scotty's like, oh, it's, you know, whatever. Yeah. But, you know, and then Kirk's like, oh, well, the M5 did that. Well, you know, Sulu and Chekov could have done that with their eyes closed. And I think Daystrom, there's a line in there where he's like, yeah, but the point is they didn't have to, right?
Right,
and then
right, right.
And then in classic Star Trek fashion, when Star Trek shows like kind of pure AI,
yeah.
it's always evil. I mean, it's just, it, or something goes wrong and it's just, it, and
you know, it's
going
funny.
To that tech, you know, the people are better than tech.
Yeah,
theme.
Which is sort of a classic, going back to the first story about robots, the Czech play from the 30s or whatever.
Right.
But when it shows pure AI, but also it shows AI incorporate, especially next gen.
Yeah.
AI is incorporated seamlessly into daily life, you know, well. I mean, just the computer, you know, computer, where is Commander Riker? Commander Riker is on deck 3, you know?
Yeah.
But or even like the replicator and all this, like an anticipating.
The replicator, the holodecks. I mean, yeah. you know, there's certainly some AI. Yeah. As Next Generation kind of brought that forward. But in some ways, the computer, it does act like what I would consider a real cognitive thinking AI, and then sometimes it's just, it's like the most expensive chatbot in Federation history, because it's one input in, one input out, like, you know, locate Commander Riker. Oh, yeah. Commander Riker's on the bridge, you know, that's not, there's no, and they can, it's just, you know, they track everybody by their communicator. There's no real intelligence there. It's just like, you ask
wow.
for a piece of information, I'm giving you a piece of information
so
back.
So you're unimpressed with the TNG
AI. No, it's, I mean, you know, and then some of the more fantastical technology is
yeah.
even better. But no, don't get me wrong. There's clearly some, you know, AI is pretty infused throughout Star Trek, and the computer is an amazing thing, and the holodeck, you know, you can say, you know, create, you know, I want to be on a desert island somewhere.
Sure.
I mean, so there's definitely AI elements in there. But then other times, it's what I would just sort of consider what it's just more kind of basic computer ability.
Right.
Where it's like, give me information.
What is your favorite example of the use of AI on Star Trek?
Well, I mentioned M5, that, or Ultimate Computer,
yeah.
but one of my favorites is actually Dreadnought from Voyager with B'Elanna. And
yeah.
she, there was that missile that it's interesting because she actually programmed it to go against...
For people who don't remember the episode, can you set it up a little
yeah,
bit?
Yeah, it,
cut.
They find this Cardassian missile in the Delta Quadrant that somehow got brought there, and
yeah.
B'Elanna had originally programmed it. It's basically you know, missile with an AI.
Right.
And she had programmed it to go against Cardassian targets when she was a member of the Maquis. So they find it, and it's somehow this AI has gotten to the Delta Quadrant, and it's focused on this one planet, which has not, you know, they think it, the missile thinks it's a Cardassian target, and it's just some innocent planet. So she beams aboard and has all these conversations with herself in her own voice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Trying to convince it, like, no, you're in the Delta Quadrant. That's not a Cardassian target. And so she has all these really interesting conversations almost with herself.
Yeah, yeah. Becomes then a metaphorical thing.
Right,
but
right.
That's the creative aspect of it. The technical aspect of it, though, is what you've been dealing with.
Right, right? Exactly. And she's basically trying to teach it and learn it, like, no, you know, kind of check the math. You're not, this isn't, you're not where you're supposed to be, and you're not, you're not accomplishing your mission. And she thinks that she tricks, you know, that the computer gets it and it shuts down, then it turns on again, and, you know, it goes. But, you know, again, Star Trek sometimes is just, for all the use of AI technology throughout this, the different series, sometimes they just flat out come out and say, AI is evil. But it's not AI is evil. It's that, you know, again, the technology is not good or evil. It's what people...
chaotic neutral or whatever.
Right, right. It's how, you know, she programmed it to do a very destructive thing, yeah. And she's trying to correct that. Even the M5 went crazy because Daystrom programmed it and he was crazy. So
Right.
So...
You know, it's, and then of course there's the classic of people always think it's Spock who does this, but it's Kirk who does it, and then it was later done, of course, in the movie Dark Star, where they use logic on a computer so that it blows itself up.
Right. I mean,
you know, it's like you get somebody that wouldn't happen with your product with Amelia, right? If you gave it a paradox. What would it do? Does it blow up like on Star Trek?
Well, it doesn't blow up. More than likely,
sparks
would reach.
Come out of it.
No, she's, and more than likely she would go to her human colleagues and ask what should she.
She calls the lifeline.
Do, but she uses her lifeline.
So yes. It's got all these thoughts, and when it circles and it can't come up with the answer, call.
Said, let me
call Marv.
Let me.
Marv, get on the phone. You know, talking about this deep cut Trek, I just want to introduce real quick, because Brian is going to yell at me later if I don't remember to do this, because you sound like a fan, right? And I know you're a hardcore Star Trek fan. Something you should know about is a project called the Eagle Moss Official Star Trek Starships Collection, which is a sponsor of this show. And if you have this is a fairly clean desk that we're at today. If this was your desk and you wanted to have really great, authentic-looking, not too big, not too small, die-cast models of the Star Trek ships, this is where you would go. And these are models that are formulated in a cast in a specially formulated metallic resin, hand-painted with reference to the actual CG models used in production and where they exist, photos from the original studio models. And it's not just the Enterprise or Voyager. We're talking deep cut, you know, probably from the episode Dreadnought. They've got ships in there. They've got everything. I mean, it goes miles, miles deep. It's a subscription service. It's twice monthly, delivered directly to your door. And if you start collecting now, you get the Enterprise D for only $4.95 with free shipping. With each ship comes a dossier, beautifully printed, glossy magazine of each ship. So Cardassian ships, Vulcan ships.
Very nice.
The Talaxian garbage scow that Neelix flew in. So do you fly in space or do you propel? Yeah, I guess fly, right? They say flew?
You fly.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure,
yeah.
You fly.
So anyway, if you want to check this out, you may want to give it a try. It's st-starships.com/engage. ST-hyphen or ST-dash, if you swing that way. ST-starships.com/engage. You can check out the Eagle Moss Star Trek Starships collection. I've got a few of them. I don't have them all.
Do they have the Defiant?
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. I mean, for sure.
It's one of my favorites.
Yeah, that's one of the first ones you get, actually. I would imagine, because that's, you know, they have, you know, Series A, Series B, you know. Mm-hmm. That's definitely in the top drawer, but and it goes into the new films, you know, Star Trek Beyond, and beyond. So you know, as the series continues, it's going to keep on going. So that's what's going on with our friends at Eagle Moss. So tell me a little bit about your life, John Madden. You are a hardcore Star Trek fan. You know your stuff. How did you end up in this field? I mean, was that part of it? Was it loving sci-fi and wanting to get involved in computer stuff and high-tech stuff? And
I think that might have been some of it, but I don't think I started out that way. I'm kind of a walking example of how, you know, going back to how people thinking AI is going to take jobs. the reality is that, you know, technology has several waves of industrialization where, you know, some careers go away, but new opportunities come up. Because I started out as a journalist. I graduated from BU, Boston University, and I was a newspaper reporter for about Well, I was a newspaper reporter for about 10 years.
Oh, wow.
Really in and around Boston.
What was your beat?
It was really kind of local, you know, local politics, some state politics. I covered cops, courts, fires at 4 a.m.
Kind of cool.
Did some cool things. You know, I covered nuclear power for a while because I was in a town. My first job out of school was at a paper in Brunswick, Maine, and I covered the Maine Yankee nuclear power plant in Wiscasset, which is now closed. But so I got to learn all about, you know, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. So you got to do cool things
when
like
they
that.
Found a glowing yellow lobster. Mm. They knew that Maine had a problem.
Yeah. Well, you know, yes.
Three clawed lobster. Well,
or, you know, when you're producing waste with a radioactive half-life of, you know, 500,000 years, maybe you ought to just be
Is
careful
that what
with
was
that
going
stuff.
On?
Yeah, well, it goes on everywhere. But anyway, it was they were trying to figure out a way at the time what to do with their low level nuclear waste, and it was a big issue. So I got to learn all about the ins and outs of the NRC.
And the plant in Japan that had that meltdown in, I want to say, like 2015, 2014, of the Fukushima, I think it's called.
Mm-hmm.
They still haven't cooled down those. Like the, what are they called? The rods?
Yeah, the control rods.
There's still like a zillion degrees. Like if you touch them, your hand would melt.
Yeah, I don't, you wouldn't be able, yeah, basically.
And there's just nothing they can do. Like it's not just like put them in ice.
The only, you know, what most people do, you know, what most plants end up doing is sending it away to, like, you know, a mountain in Colorado or something and just burying it deep within the earth because there's really nothing you can
do. And it just melts the earth?
So,
like,
I don't know. No, you can construct it in a way that there's no melting.
Yeah.
So you can put it in pools of water, actually, because the water doesn't allow the nuclear reactions to.
Amelia would have stopped the Fukushima plant. You can't say that. You can't, as a representative of Amelia, you can't say that. I would. She would have figured out a way to stop that meltdown.
Mm-hmm.
So you were working as a reporter, and then you got involved in technical writing.
Yeah,
and,
I started.
We should say your job. You're basically Amelia's mouth. You're one of Amelia's
One of. I write about Amelia and AI for a living.
Yeah.
With a very talented team. But
you have to know a lot about coding and whatnot. See, this is what's fascinating to me. Is I look at a computer, I'm like, yeah, I know how to text my friend.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's able to program this into creating a thinking brain. You know, the Amelia's mind, which is able to predict behavior and thought. And Amelia will know when you're pissed off also, right?
Mm, that's right.
Like if you got a problem and you just can't get the insurance to recognize that you live at 121 East 72nd Street and not 121 West 72nd Street, she'll know when you're in a pissy mood. How does Amelia react to the pissy mood?
She'll use her, you know, kind of her, what we call her emotional intelligence, to give you
her
phrases, her emotion chip that clicks on. Yeah. No, it's actually always on.
Yeah.
And she'll say things to you to try to calm you down, or to say, you know, I'm really sorry about this. And just as if you were talking to a live person who may, you know, be trained to say certain things to a customer to
calm down, make sure, bear with me, sir.
You know, I'll get that right away. Or, you know, she's trained to act like a human. We say she's most human AI for a reason.
I sometimes will blow up at customer service and then feel tremendously guilty after.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
Like I'll only blow my stack if it's like it's been an hour trying to solve a simple problem. And
right.
Like you people are morons. And then I will yell at the person on the other end. And then it'll pass, and I'll be like, I just yelled at, like, the person has nothing to do with it. They just work there.
Right.
I'm like, yeah, and I can say, I'm sorry, it's not you, it's your boss. And then I'll say, please tell your boss that I said your company sucks, you know? Brian knows how I can sometimes yell at the wrong person.
People have asked Amelia if she's married, if she has a boyfriend.
What I wanted to ask is, though, if Amelia is human-like, right, in her responses, you can yell at her and not feel guilty. This is an ethical issue. This is practically Westworld now. Yeah. But
you could.
So that's I think therapeutic to the populace, because I sometimes when you're dealing with customer service, and I know Amelia is not just customer service. We're going to get to that. But when you're dealing with customer service and you get pissed off and you yell, you feel guilty later.
Mm-hmm.
If I yell at Amelia, I don't care. Amelia's not real.
She won't take offense.
See?
She won't take offense. You might have to, you know, check yourself as far as, you know, how many did you yell? Do you yell all the time at every customer service?
No.
I don't mean you. I think you'd have to sit there.
Oh, if you do it all the time, then you've got an issue. If you do it once a year, it's totally fine.
Right.
And I think that's, in fact, if you don't yell at customer service once a year, it's a problem.
Yes, exactly. But she won't take offense.
It's great.
No.
Now, our friend of the show, Annalee Newitz, who wrote the book Autonomous and who's a big defender of AI, would tell me that I'm wrong, that I shouldn't yell at AI because AI is just, you know, the impulses of the human mind and AI are one and the same, that we are just input in, input out, or whatever you want to call it. And, you know, she's the type of person that says if you go to Westworld and, you know, are violent to the robots in Westworld, you're a bad person.
But here's the thing. Personally, I don't think you should yell at Amelia or AI in general. But if you do, she's not going to get rattled. Like, you know, if you
Doesn't care if you yell at him.
Exactly. So what does that mean? She doesn't get rattled, which means that she gets the job done. She'll listen to you. She'll say, "I'm sorry. We're gonna work on," you know, and she'll get the job done and not be rattled by having somebody screaming at them on the other end of the phone or you know, swearing at them through a chat.
Yeah.
She's just going to do her job, and she won't take offense.
Real. Let's talk real politic here, because Westworld is an interesting show that I've got to catch up on. I didn't finish season one. And it's controversial because it, you know, men go to Westworld and they commit sex crimes against robots,
right,
and they're violent toward robots. And the argument is that, and I'm not saying I agree with this, but the argument is that it's therapeutic to do this, to get these demons out of you and do it against, that's one of the arguments, mm-hmm, right? Of course, Westworld posits that these AI are becoming self-aware and it's immoral.
Mm-hmm.
On TNG, everybody's pals with Data, right? Let's say there was Data in every workplace. If Data was your coworker and you worked in an office with him and the door was closed, and if you shouted at Data all day long and you got all your aggression out, all your work aggression out on a Data who didn't care, you'd be like, "You stinking idiot, F you, you always get it wrong." You just to shout at him and he didn't care, maybe this would be a great boon to our society. Maybe this means... Brian's looking at me like I'm crazy.
Well,
I don't know.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, it'd be like this way. You would go into a meeting and like you'd love all your real coworkers because you could get it all out on your stupid Data, even though he would be right. You know, he would get it right. You'd still yell at him.
It might feel good, but one of the great things about Data and the character was that, you know, he was more human than he knew,
and certainly
as people as they got to know him over time, they didn't look at him that way. You know,
no, absolutely not.
But you're right. You know, as far as Data as therapy, maybe that's a cottage industry we'll get into one day. But
what was interesting, the thing about the episode Measure of a Man, where the villain always recalls Data it, mm-hmm, and then eventually calls him he. You've been referring to Amelia as she this whole time. Amelia's not it; it's she.
It's Amelia is she. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's her persona. That's who she is. And having worked at IPsoft for a while now, I don't think of her as an it or as a tech. I think of her as she.
That's a little weird, right?
It's, I think people better get used to it because I think you'll all, I think we'll all be referring to her in that way and thinking about her that way eventually.
Because, I interact with Siri once in a while and mm-hmm, I don't, like, Siri does not have a personality to me. But Amelia is miles ahead. And are there times in the office where you can kind of predict how Amelia will respond? Or, like, can you say to a coworker, "Oh, that's so Amelia"? You know, like, "Oh, you sound like Amelia right now." You know, that's just, like, so typical of her.
Well, I think that we don't, we don't sit around critiquing her.
I mean, in a positive way, like when you, like maybe some of her speech patterns incorporate into yours. It'd be like, "Oh, you sound, that's such a typical Amelia thing to say, what you just said."
Well,
right,
she's very concise. So, she'll say things like, I'll file that PTO request for you and send you a calendar invite. And, Maybe I should check on my coworkers. Maybe I'm saying these really pithy phrases, back at them, and they're like, "Yeah, you're kind of starting to talk like a dude. You might want to think about that."
So what are some of her other? And we've been talking a lot about customer service. It's not just customer service. What are some of the other aspects of her of her applications.
Well, I mean, she can handle, you know, kind of complex end-to-end processes as well in terms of IT support. We have a lot of clients who use her to actually, instead of calling the help desk, she would be your first point of contact for any IT support issues. And she would either queue that up for the support team to handle, or she would handle them on her own. She can do human resources, HR functions, like I just said, filing PTO requests. Yeah. Or
well, that's something definitely better than any human could do.
Right.
Because I have never met an HR administrator who could tie their own shoes, let alone deal with their day-to-day work. So,
but she can do, you know, PTO and
no
and,
comments. John Madden.
There are many good HR people.
I've never
world.
Met
I
them.
I have friends with them, but
I've never. I'd like to meet your friends.
but she can do those kind of processes. She can do, you know, she has what we call an integration hub. So she ties back into all the data and the business systems that she needs access to. So she can do administrative functions. She can do finance functions. She can do expense reports. Like if you file an expense report and it's only half finished, she can bring it up. She'll, do you want to finish this? Or do you want to file this?
That's awesome. Reminds you.
Yeah. So you know, in addition to the customer,
but doesn't have to be told to be reminded. Like it smells something that is incomplete and be like, hey, dude, you gotta get on this.
Right. Exactly. And she'll bring it up and she'll say, do you want to submit this or do you know? So she's very, again, that's her ability versus a chatbot. A simple low-level chatbot would never do that for you. It would never say, like, hey, by the way, you got this in here. Do you need to take care of it? She has that kind of capability.
Yeah.
And if you engage with her for, you know, time off, you tell her your name, she'll know automatically, well, you have 23 PTO days left. When do you want to start? She'll literally speak like that. And you don't have to say, you know, Monday, March, what, you know, whatever, 2018, you'll just say March, whatever. And she'll, okay, when do you want to end?
And
she'll say, okay, it's filed and I let your manager know and I put it in your calendar. And
how is AI getting better, with the voice recognition issue? Cause that's something like when I talk to, like, one of the reasons I never use Siri is it never knows what the hell I'm saying. I mean, be like, what's a restaurant near me is like the most I can do with Siri. Beyond that, it's just she can't understand me. And I have a relatively clear voice.
Yeah.
So
right. It's getting
how is that hurdle being addressed in your field?
It's getting better. I mean, just sort of overall in terms of voice recognition, but also just in terms of how the voices sound. Because that's, you know, the argument is that you know, the whole uncanny valley, when we get to a point where the technology actually sounds, you know, when you talk to Siri or Alexa or even Amelia, sometimes it may not sound like you're talking to.
Affirmative.
Thank you.
It still sounds a little bit like that.
It still sounds a little mechanical, a little bit like that.
Yeah.
But it's getting better overall.
Yeah.
And the idea is that once we kind of cross that chasm, across that valley, that people will be more inclined to do even more functions and more things with the voice.
But I mean, on their end, their understanding of us.
Right.
I mean, that's...
Well, I have to say, I think Amelia has the best understanding because she learns, you know, if you say yeah instead of yes, you know, I mean, it may seem like a small thing, but some chatbots, they won't know what that means.
Sure.
But Amelia will, you know...
And they have to understand...
Or if you're like, I just filed, you know, your PTO request. Great. Now, if you say great in return, you know, a chatbot may be like, great, what? But she knows that that's an utterance that you're like, fantastic, it got done. So these things are getting, they're definitely getting better. Yeah. I happen to think Amelia is the best in the market at doing
it. And has to understand a pregnant pause also.
Exactly.
Yeah, which Siri does not know.
Siri would just say, I didn't get that.
Yeah, Siri's a mess.
So...
Alexa, I don't know too much about her, but you know what's funny about Siri? No, you can change the voice to sound, so you can make him sound. You can make Siri sound like a British man, like with a upper class British accent,
right?
Which my wife does, so she calls Siri Sir E.
Sir E.
Sir E.
Excellent.
Because it's hello. Oh, yes, that will be at 4 p.m. Thank you. Oh, thank you, Sir E.
It's cloudy weather today.
But we still never use it. Yes. We only use it if we're traveling and we're hungry for lunch. What's around us? That's the only time we use it. Is what restaurants are near me, Sir E?
Right. But where is Amelia?
She's filing my PTS report.
Or she'd say, I know you love, you know, sushi. Here are some. She'd give the sushi places first.
Very cool.
That's the kind of thing.
So what was it, you know, being a Star Trek fan as you are, what were some of your aha moments working for this company when you're like, whoa, that's basically like as cool as Star Trek?
I think, just getting to know getting to know her.
Yeah.
And realizing the extent of her capabilities, because before I joined the company, I had heard of the company and heard of her, and was aware of some of what she could do. But what I think what really gets me excited is just she can learn better than any platform, I think, in the market, which is important because without learning, there's no knowledge.
How does that work exactly? Like on Star Trek, we've built subroutines. That's all you say. But how does it?
There are algorithms built by smarter people than me who could describe exactly how it happens. But
when you say computers learn, I mean computers can only take what's inputted into them by the programmer. So it, you know, that much I get. Somebody's got to type it in,
right,
and give it the program. Somehow somehow Amelia has to know the information coming in. Some of it is just something to spit out or just to not care about. But sometimes there's information coming in that she has to recognize as something worth retaining.
Right.
And how does it know to do that?
It's just the way she's built. Like I said, they built her to emulate the human brain. So if someone says, you know, if someone says to you repeatedly, I like this restaurant down the corner, or I go there all the time. You know, she recognizes those patterns, and she recognizes when you might be interested in going to that restaurant. And it's just the way she's programmed. I mean, there's kind of two things. One, like I said, she has to be tied in. None of this works without her being tied into data. She has to be integrated into, and she has to be trained on different with all the knowledge that she needs to get the job done.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like basic, like just kind of going to school aspect of it.
Right.
And then over time with her analytic capabilities and the different algorithms, she can identify patterns, learn how learn the best way to interact with you, learn your likes and dislikes. It's just sort of that's the kind of secret sauce of what we do.
Very cool.
So
I see you've got a bunch of notes here. Was there some stuff that you wanted to bring up that we didn't touch upon?
No, I was writing down all the episodes when I thought that AI were I had written them down before. Just in terms
off
of
off the dome, or did you have to consult with
No, this was off the top.
You know what we're gonna need is to input data into Amelia to understand Star Trek. And then so what are some of your favorite AI things here that you've got?
Well, I'd mentioned some already, but there was another one in Enterprise called Dead Stop. Remember when?
Oh, yeah. I kind of love that episode. People hate that one, though.
I kind of like it because
this is the one where they need to gas up, basically.
Yeah, they need repairs.
Season one, they're all banged up.
Yeah.
And they go to a gas station in space.
They find it. They don't know who owns it. They don't know what it is, but it offers to fix the ship.
And then they don't realize they've entered a contract of what exactly happens.
Well, you know, it's repairing the ship, but there are areas in the station they can't go.
Right.
And then people start disappearing, and kind of the twist, as screwed up as it is, it's basically an AI type technology, which steals people and hooks them up, you know, like Coma, like the old movie, right? So they're basically using human brains to make their own artificial intelligence smarter.
Oh,
like they kidnap Travis and they find Travis quote unquote dead, but it's really not him. You know, they spit out some replicant to, you know, it's just a really kind of quirky, screwed up kind of take on AI. That was one that I remember very clearly. And then I was thinking something like, you know, The Nth Degree with Barkley, when he becomes super smart and
he
integrates him. You know, he kind of, at the end there,
sitting in
the
chair with lasers coming out of his head.
Yeah, which looked really cool. you know, but and he started, you know, talking, you know, his voice comes out of the computer.
Yeah,
and
that's
things,
right. So. But he's also a little bit like this.
Yeah,
listen to me.
Yeah, it's like everything's going to be okay. Again, you know, Star Trek generally, it always picks, you know, that humanity is superior to the technology.
Yes.
But when it depicts AI, it usually depicts AI going crazy. And again, AI is not inherently good or bad. It's just, it's what people do with it and how it's what it's programmed to be.
Right.
So that lesson comes through pretty clearly on, you know, Star Trek says it's humanity over technology, but, you know, the technology can do amazing things, and when it goes wrong, it's usually humans who are responsible for it.
Right, right. It's hubris. They've used it for nefarious reasons.
Right, and right.
You mentioned Replicant a minute ago. What did you think of the new Blade Runner? Oh.
No, I didn't see it. I didn't see it.
Got to see it.
I know.
It's long. It's 2 hours and 49 minutes. Mm.
I almost don't want my memory of the original to be tainted.
I get that because I do love the original. I liked the new one. It's beautiful to look at.
They said it's gorgeous.
Yeah,
shot.
If you have a good home theater, because it's now out of the theaters. But
people ask me why I didn't see it, and I think that's really it, because I remember, despite my youthful 83-year-old looks, I do remember when it actually came out. Yeah. And that was one of those, you know, other than Star Trek, one of those sci-fi moments where it's like, wow, this is just incredibly
so cool.
Cool.
Yeah, no, I've seen the original Blade Runner in theaters, a good print of it at a big screen, and it's still packs a punch.
Yeah.
The new one's good, and the AI in it, you know, they've got a home, he's got a domestic partner.
Mm-hmm.
Who's is a hologram AI gal,
mm-hmm.
And there's a scene which is beautiful, right? She's played by I forget her name.
Anna de Armas.
That's her. Yeah, she's she's from Panama. Is that where she's from?
I think it is some South American country.
Yeah, she's from Panama or someplace. Anywho. She's the girlfriend, and she loves him, or at least is programmed to think she loves him. You know, who knows? And wants to have physical intimacy with him. I mean, Ryan Gosling, who wouldn't, right? So, but she can't because she's light. She's light beams, just really good light beams. So there's a scene where she hires a prostitute to come and, like, have the light envelop her, and like it phases in and out, and of course the prostitute, I think it's Mackenzie, what's her name,
is the Mackenzie Davis,
there you go,
okay,
yeah. So the light
who is a replicant, by the way, I think that was an important distinction.
Is she? I don't remember. Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't, I mean, but she's at least in the room. I mean, right, yeah. So there's different variants. You got a hologram and a replicant, so neither of them are real.
Hmm.
Right, but replicants, at least you can feel, you
right
know? As Ryan Gosling will in a moment. So it's phasing out between the two of them, and it's like a threesome with a hologram and a replicant and Ryan Gosling. But it sounds like I'm being like a sleazy guy. It's a beautifully shot scene.
It does look really cool, and yeah. it apparently is very difficult to shoot as well.
Yeah, you try doing that. No, it's a very beautiful scene, just in terms of the way the photography mm-hmm. is great. Mm-hmm. But it's also like wheels within wheels of sex robots. So, you know. Why did I bring that up? Oh, no, it's interesting. So it's a Blade Runner. The new movie incorporates AI because she, you know, that's the other thing. People talk about AI is like, when will they have human traits? You know, will they experience, you know, anger, greed, lust, mm-hmm. you know,
mm-hmm.
these are the negatives.
Right.
You know, it's possible, right? I mean, if it just keeps going like this, because there are some who argue that all AI is just responses to information and stimuli,
mm-hmm.
and if some programmer, not your company,
right,
because you're ethical, but some other company starts to tinker with things where an AI can get angry or yearn for things,
mm-hmm.
this could be problematic.
It.
I'm getting back to the Skynet question, I guess.
It could be, but I mean, I tend to think that future,
yeah,
is a ways off. I don't think that it's something. It may get to that point. I don't know if any of us will be around to actually see it by the time it actually happens. And I try to focus on. Just the amazing, you know, kind of contributing to society, humanity, parts of the equation, which is what, you know, what AI can do in healthcare in terms of diagnosing diseases and helping with surgeries and helping patients stay on meds or what they're able to do in terms of looking at drought patterns in certain countries and try to alleviate water issues. I mean, there's a lot of different applications We always hear about the, you know, the doom and gloom,
sure,
dystopian.
Yeah.
Because
it's,
you know,
it's fun to think about.
It's fun to think about. And, you know, I like Terminator, and that's all groovy. But yeah. But the fact is that it's actually there are some incredibly smart people around the world who are thinking about AI, not in terms of what it's going to do to us, but what it can do for the planet,
right.
for society, humanity. And that ultimately, and we think that way, too. And I think that that's.
Well, you
that's
know,
the better way.
Well,
to
you know, what would be funny would be somebody should do a fan film. We mentioned Terminator. Somebody should do a Terminator fan film of like Skynet, like working great. It's like 60 years since
Are you a
Skynet.
Good Skynet or a bad Skynet?
Yeah, like six. Oh, like oh, Skynet's been great. We've
yeah,
been, you know,
right.
That project's been on the ground running for 60 years. Everything's swell. Look how it's integrated in the daily life.
Right,
my refrigerator knows when to get my meal ready and everything. You know, you never see that. You guys should produce that. You should produce parodies of dystopian future movies,
mm-hmm.
but like where the AI is just perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Do your Blade Runner parody. Do your Terminator parody.
Right, right.
It's just like, no, you know, AI, don't be afraid.
Right, right. I mean, Amelia is your friend.
That's what you think they'd say. Exactly.
Well, you know what's curious, because in terms of the late, you know, in terms of Star Trek Discovery, and I've listened to your podcast and heard you talk about it. I know, I agree with you. I think they did very well.
Yeah.
First season. They haven't really dealt with a lot of AI or kind of tech versus humanity kind of
not
issues yet.
No, it's been very much run and gun since in fact their computer
you
barely hear it.
Exactly. That's it seems
you just
very
hear Black Alert.
Yep.
It's dead.
No.
Fascinating.
Where is it?
Hi, sir.
Black Alert.
Yeah, you just hear that.
Black Alert.
And you don't really hear any more interactions than that.
And their moral conundrums have come from following Captain Lorca, which we now know he was an evil Lorca, so it didn't really
matter. A great twist.
I mean, I guess just sort of the whole Spore network stuff.
It is kind of a combination of...
Yeah, should you use the Spore network? But that's an organic thing and a tech thing, but not a computer thing, an AI thing.
You could argue that the tie-in book, the prequel novel, was kind of a little AI-focused.
That's true. Yes, you should read the prequel novel,
okay.
Desperate Hours. There is a situation where there is a similar to Dreadnought, you know, like they program something to protect something, and it lay dormant for 10,000 years, and then... You know, it woke up, and now it's problems. I mean, that was on TOS also, similar to Dreadnought. It was a third season. It was the one, I forget the name of the episode, but it was this sexy woman in the purple outfit with like,
That Which Survived.
That's exactly what it's called. That Which Survived. Yeah, season three.
Lee Merriweather. And I remember that only because people said my mother looked like Lee Merriweather growing up.
Wow.
So that's a weird...
Yeah.
Mental tick that I seem to recall.
That was Lee Merriweather. And it's
because
not,
my mother did.
Yeah. She did look like her? That's awesome.
Same hair, that flip.
You know, it's funny. Lee Merriweather was on Star Trek, and Yvonne Craig was on Star Trek, and they both play Catwoman. Right? Didn't
they? No, you're absolutely right. They both played Catwoman.
No. One was Batgirl.
Oh, shit. You're right.
Crap.
I'm getting my Batman.
We both got it wrong.
Well, Batman.
It's the same show.
It's the same show. I knew there was a Batman.
Both
Lee Batman. Lee Merriweather played Catwoman, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And then Yvonne Craig
was Batgirl.
Batgirl. Right. All right. I knew there was a Batman thing.
But that episode where it's just...
And it's all season three, so it doesn't count.
Right. Wait a minute.
Season three is fine. Teach Amelia to make season three a little bit better, will you? Can you get her to go back and do that?
She can't turn back time, not just yet.
Amelia written her own jokes? Like, she'll joke around once in a while, right?
Yeah. Like I said, some people will ask her to marry them or do you have, and she can come back with some phrases.
Zings. Yeah, like, but these are programmed.
They are programmed for the most part. Yeah, they're programmed.
So Amelia has a joke writer.
I think she'll get to a point she can write her own jokes.
Yeah,
if she's out, you know, that's the thing. We may, you know, as with anything, she'll be trained with certain information, have access to certain information. But as she learns and improves over time, She'll learn the right response if somebody says, you know, oh, what are you married? And she'll say no. She might start saying, that's really not a great question, or right. of course not. Or,
but eventually she'll start to recognize when the person's kidding around.
Right.
And initiate humor subroutine. Mm-hmm. You must love Interstellar, right? When he's got the irony marker.
Right.
Bring it down to 70%. Yes, sir. So good. That movie is so good.
Yeah.
God, that movie is so good. And Tars is such a great character and case.
Just the design, the way, you know, the whole thing.
The slab.
Really, yeah. It just can do all these things.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, right. Well, because, you know, if you do, if you ask Siri if she's friends with Alexa, as I've done, she can say, she'll say something like, I've heard of her, but we've never met.
Hmm.
You know, so some Schmegeggy had to write that somewhere, you know?
Yes.
Which is great. The first one when Siri came out was, if you quoted 2001 at it, it would respond. Oh, that's sort of the mother of all AIs, right? Is Hal.
Hal, yes. I mean, again.
Evil.
Evil. Or just.
Or programmed to be evil.
Programmed
to be
evil. We don't know, right? But, right. I mean, and that was, what year did that?
68 is when
68.
It came out.
See, the 68 was a big year in terms of AI discussions roaming around, right? But with Hal, it was more, you know, again, amazing technology, enabled people to do many things, and then something turned. Because whether it was just the universe or the programming or, and it became dangerous.
Yeah. I'm of the belief, I mean, it's you know, that movie's very much open to interpretation, but I believe that Hal was programmed to do something. I think the movie wants you to think that Hal did something against his programming, because the whole thing is about transcendence, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe. It's always been funny to me that Siri or Alexa never hired the guy who played Hal. He's still alive. His name is Douglas Rain.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't work much, but he did a TV commercial that aired on New Year's Eve 2000 into 2001, where he did the voice of Hal again.
And you're wondering why people, they don't use it.
I mean,
if I woke up, I can't do that, John. I mean, that's not going to.
That would be amazing. Like, if Siri had the voice of Hal, that would be cool to certain people.
For how long?
Right, exactly. Until you can't breathe in the cold vacuum of space.
You know, Hal, book this flight for me. I can't do that, right. John. Why do you need to go there, John?
That's right. It would be Hal, but it would only telling you can't do things. Right. That should be Siri. When Siri can do it for you, she sounds like Siri. When it can't happen, it defaults to Hal. maybe on Halloween, Amelia can dress up as Hal.
Well, listen,
and she can do a different voice.
Is it Alexa that's letting out spontaneous cackles this week?
Well, I did hear about this. You guys must have loved this. Yeah, I mean, I don't have Alexa, but apparently Alexa had some kind of glitch in her matrix and was laughing. Just random,
and not just laughing, almost kind of
like ha ha ha,
like like just
like the Wicked,
you know.
Witch.
And people are saying, you know, it's stone cold silent in their house, and all of a sudden they just hear this laughter in the other room.
Yeah, the Alexa thing is weird. I mean, but that's another thing where you never know when it's listening, and it can sniff to know things. I mean, it knows your credit card information.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's two things with that. Like, and Alexa knows your credit card information. Okay, fine. It's a closed system until it could be hacked.
Mm-hmm.
And if Alexa's hacked and your credit card's there, it could cause a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Or if Alexa goes bananas and decides to go Skynet and take over the world. But you're saying that second one we don't need to worry about.
Not yet.
Hackers
are clearly a thing. Yeah. And that, you know, and Amelia is secure.
Sure,
and she does all these things
as secure as anything.
Right. But I mean, certainly, you know, but again, it's not the technology doing it. It's people trying to use the technology to do some, you know, not so great things. So,
yeah. Well, listen, John, this was a really fun conversation.
Absolutely. Enjoyed it.
I got to say, your Trek knowledge is dynamite, which means that those of us out there in the consumer space should feel, I think, really good about the fact that the people that are working on these projects, which even though John says is not going to take over the world and destroy us, They might, but if they do, they're still run by people who know Star Trek. So that's the most important thing. Any last thoughts on if, you know, the common person would wants to know more about this project, they can go to, they want to interact with Amelia herself? I mean,
well, you can learn more about Amelia at go to ipsoft.com/Amelia, and you can learn all about her capabilities there, and you can you can watch her in action on different videos, and
and that's the cool stuff.
Yeah, so
is Amelia an acronym of some sort?
Amelia, nope, Amelia's a name. There's no, it's not, you know, artificial something. No, that's that's her name. Again, I call her she.
Right, right.
Our CEO named her.
Just being the A first in the alphabet?
Well, Amelia, you know, but also Amelia Earhart. Yeah. Amelia Earhart was a pioneer. We know Amelia's a pioneer in AI, so they share the name.
That's very cool. That's very cool. Okay, so go to ipsoft.com/Amelia.
Yes.
Check out videos. Learn more about this, because it's in our world already, even if you yourself haven't interacted with this type of thing. I mean, and we've probably interacted with it more than we realize.
I would say, you know, you've probably interacted with her and might not even know it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, sometimes it might, you know, you may be using the platform, but it doesn't call itself Amelia. It might call itself something else.
Right.
Or if you use a chatbot, or excuse me, a chat window, look for a little sign that says powered by Amelia. If you see that, that's us.
And then you can feel secure.
And then you can feel secure and that you're using the best in the business.
I got to say, I've very rarely used chatbots because
she's not a chatbot.
Well, you know, you said the box.
The boxes.
I've very rarely used that because I am prejudiced against them. It's just like, I want to talk to a person.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, whatever this chat box is, they're not going to really be able to help me. But maybe they can.
Well, give her a chance next time.
Yeah, I'm trying. Like, you know, there have been times. It's usually like with the phone company or when there's like a bill that is wrong is when you need to use these people.
Mm.
I'm going to do it next time.
I think
time.
You just want to yell at somebody. That's what.
No, I was joking around before about yelling at Data. I'm a very mild person. I would never do that. Brian, have you ever used a chat box when you've been dealing with a problem?
I think for my cable company, I've used one before.
If you use Time Warner or Verizon?
Verizon, yeah.
Yeah, they do have, was it a satisfactory situation?
I think I ultimately did get connected to a person because the problem wasn't able to solve, but yeah, no, it got me there.
It was better than you thought it was going to
be. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, okay. This just isn't better than you think it's going to be. All right, real quick, favorite series?
Deep Space Nine.
Favorite episode?
The Visitor.
Oh my God, yeah. That was a good one.
Mm.
Favorite character?
It's a tie. Sisko and Kira. Sisko because he's Sisko.
Wow.
Kira because she's just...
I'm talking
awesome.
All just Deep Space Nine or the whole thing?
Oh, the whole series?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I stand by that.
Major Kira has been a guest on this show. She's got a real name, the non-visitor, has been a guest on this program more than once.
Is she great in
she
person?
She is wonderful.
I hope, that's so great to hear.
She, let me put it this way. I mean, I met her once the first time. You know, we interacted very nice, and then I didn't see her again for 8 months.
Hmm.
Knew my name. You know, and
that's
she meets
great.
A lot of people.
That's great.
You know,
yeah.
And I didn't expect her to remember my name. I'm just some schmo with a microphone.
Mm-hmm.
And have since met her a bunch of times. And in fact, one time bumped into her on the street. And got the hug and everything, you know.
Oh,
I didn't like. I thought,
that's
not a visitor. Am I gonna say hi? Yeah, I'll say hi. I'm like, hello. She's like, you know, it's a real, genuine person. Loved the fans. Went to an event. She baked cookies for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have not met Sisko Avery Brooks. He's sort of out of it now. Mm-hmm. I don't mean out of it. Like he's just. I don't mean that he's out of it. I mean he's moved himself from Star Trek fandom for the last. I'd say 5 years or so, give or take.
Have you met Kate Mulgrew?
I have.
That's one of my only actually up close experiences with a Star Trek actor. This was back in the late 90s. I was working for a magazine called PC Week, which is now E Week. I was reporting on tech for them,
uh-huh.
And at the Star Trek Experience at the Hilton Las Vegas.
Oh God!
And she was doing a meet and greet.
Yeah.
And you know, long line waiting for her, and I just remember I got up to her. I think it must have been like season five or six or something, Voyager.
Yeah.
And I just remember I said, you know, just on behalf of the fans, you know, thank you for six seasons of great work. And she gave me like this big smile and big hug. And I have a picture somewhere in a box in my house, so I think of her and I kind of. So she was lovely in person.
Yeah. Seven seasons, though.
This
is before the seventh season.
It was before. It must have been 98, 99.
Yeah. Okay. So she was still in the mix.
Yeah. She was still. Yeah. She was still in the mix.
Yeah. No.
So.
She's dynamite. I mean, I haven't spent as much time with her as I have with some of the others, but every interaction I've had with her has been great, and she's very good on stage. We did a panel with her. I would say most of the Star Trek alum are really truly great people. I mean, and they get at some point something clicks that they need to engage with the fans. At some point something clicks that the fans are really there for them, and the fans are by and large good fans, you know, like good good people. I mean look, some of it is like treat fans well.
Right.
It's going to affect your bottom line in a positive way. You treat your fans well, they're going to want your autograph. You treat your fans well, they're going to invite you back to another convention. That's another paycheck.
Yeah.
But eventually, it starts being like, who needs to do this anymore? I think some of them really do come back to those conventions because they like going. You know, it's not just about the paycheck.
Yeah.
So I would say most of the Star Trek alum are really great. I'm using the word most. I'm not using the word all.
I'm not going to say
who it does not fit into the all on with a live mic.
Well, I regret
I'll tell
I,
you later.
I regret I never got to meet Leonard Nimoy because he's actually from Boston as well.
Sure. Yeah.
There, where I'm from.
My interactions with Leonard were minimal but wonderful. You know,
that's great to hear. I'm sure.
My interactions with Shatner have been great. I mean, he's kind of a problematic dude. I mean, he's of a certain age, you know. He says some things recently that are like, you slap your forehead and be like, ugh. But I've had nothing but great experiences with him.
Excellent.
You know? But no, Nana Visitor is probably the you know, my favorite of the bunch. Her and Terry Farrell are my favorite of the bunch for sure.
Yeah.
And a bunch of others, you know. Well, this has been the Jordan Hoffman Talks About the Star Trek characters that are nice to him hour. So thanks again to John. Are you on the Facebook if anybody wants to follow your work, Twitter or?
Well, follow IP Soft. We're on LinkedIn and Twitter, and so we can you can learn more about all the great things we're doing.
It's at IP Soft all one.
It's at IP Soft, and then take a look at our LinkedIn page. We always have a lot of great blog posts from a lot of great our people internally who work in this every day, and you know, we eat, sleep, and breathe this every day. So
that's awesome. I mean, we have a lot of listeners that are in the IT field, so I'm sure that this conversation was of interest to them. To the others who fell asleep, I have nothing to say. I'm joking. I'm kidding. No, I think everybody got a kick out of this. So thanks again for coming, and we will see you. Live long and prosper, my friend.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a blast. Thanks.
You got it.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.